This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Jill Ryan. Here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. It's the podcast designed to catch up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of September 1st, 2025. In news, a state law will soon allow duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, and townhomes to be built on single-family lots in cities with 75,000 or more people. The goal is to increase density and improve affordability within a one-mile radius of the city's downtown district. But residents in several historic Phoenix neighborhoods are pushing back. Kathy Ritchie has more.
Inside Memorial Hall at Steele Indian School Park, neighbors take their seats for a second community meeting hosted by City of Phoenix officials. The crowd is calm, conversational, and noticeably thinner than Brad Brower expected.
I am kind of surprised at the turnout.
Brower is the president of the Willow Neighborhood Association and a longtime resident. For more than a year, he's been sounding the alarm about the middle housing law.
I thought they'd be filling the rafters with how many people were upset about not being able to fit in the room at Burton Bar on August 11th.
At the first meeting, it was standing room only. Willow residents came out in force to oppose the impending law, which many fear will open the door to developers, demolishing historic homes in favor of multifamily units.
So it is kind of surprising that there's not everyone filling this as much as they can.
The law is supposed to help increase housing supply and create more affordable options in the downtown area. But that affordability piece is something Brower seriously questions. So does Phoenix City Councilwoman Laura Pastor, who represents the area.
If you're trying to create affordability, then create affordability in the areas that you're able to create affordability. Why encroach in a single family historic district?
Where houses, which were built in the early to mid-1900s, are worth upwards of $1 million or more. A week before the second community meeting, Brower takes me on a short walking tour of the Willow. Each home is unique, charming, and in some cases, looks like something right out of a fairy tale. He points out a 1940s ranch, which he estimates is worth around $800,000.
You can't buy that, scrape it, for another, $400,000, $500,000 to scrape it, and then build a fourplex on top of this and call it affordable. It doesn't pencil out.
That may be true today, but in the 1970s and 80s, downtown Phoenix was a different, less desirable place. People were moving to the suburbs, and commercial development was creeping into neighborhoods like Willow. Homes here were affordable, but neighbors also fought to protect and preserve the area. In 1990, the Willow earned its historic designation from the City of Phoenix. A historic status offers certain protections, such as ensuring any changes are compatible with the historic character of the property or district. But this new middle housing law overrides much of that. Helena Reuter is a historic preservation officer with the city.
As it is now, if you're looking to do anything in terms of new construction or modifications that require a building permit, it will still come to us for design review.
And she says the one-year stay of demolition will also remain in place, meaning developers can't just bulldoze their way in. They'll also need a redevelopment plan.
So you're going through that one-year hold, and then again, that infill process, that redevelopment plan is an entire public hearing process where neighbors can comment about the proposal.
Which might be a deterrent for some developers, but for residents like Brower and others who invested a lot of money and time into their home and community, that's not enough. They want their neighborhood and other historic areas fully exempt from the law. So is this a case of NIMBYism? Aaron Montaño-Serrells calls that label misguided.
I would love affordable housing in this neighborhood, but we're not developing affordable housing. We're building fourplex, most likely market and luxury units.
Montaño-Serrells grew up in Willow and now lives just a few streets from Brower. He's also the association's vice president. For Montaño-Serrells, there's another layer to this debate, the preservation of Phoenix's history.
Unfortunately, the state, without any conversations with the neighbors, not just Willow, but the other neighborhoods that it would affect, without any conversation, decided to put in this new law for middle housing that would effectively erase the historic areas that we have.
Back at Memorial Hall, staff prepare to present zoning updates. Councilwoman Pastor gets up and takes the mic. She doesn't hold back.
Here, I'm going to tell you quite frank what I got told. Willow is just whining.
Pastor isn't having it. Neither is the crowd.
You heard my response.
of the response was, they're not whiny. They're protecting their neighborhood. They're protecting their asset. They're protecting their home.
But there's also not much they can do except retain an attorney, which they've done, as well as a lobbyist, in hopes of getting that exemption through the Republican-led legislature. Kathy Ritchie, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In business, Governor Katie Hobbs visited Chase Field on Wednesday to celebrate legislation that will use state, county, and local tax dollars to upgrade the home of the Arizona Diamondbacks. From the politics desk, Wayne Schutzke reports.
The bill authorizes the use of $500 million in public money to renovate the 30-year-old stadium, though that number could balloon to over $1 billion with adjustments for inflation. Some Democrats criticized the deal for using public dollars to benefit a multi-billion-dollar sports franchise. But Hobbs says the deal was needed to ensure a major economic engine remains in downtown Phoenix.
It's a simple fact that without the Diamondbacks playing here at Chase Field, Arizona would be worse off. And I was not about to let that happen.
Chase Field is owned by a Maricopa County Stadium District, and the deal was pitched as a way to solve a long-standing dispute between the team and county over needed repairs. Diamondbacks president Derek Hall says the team is still negotiating a lease renewal, which could last up to 30 years. Wayne Chutsky, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
This is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. The Navajo Nation may start using automatic license plate readers from a company with a growing reach in Arizona and a widening swath of criticism across the U.S. From the Fronteras Desk in Flagstaff, Michelle Marisco reports.
A committee made up of the tribe's legislative council heard from Flock Safety, the Atlanta, Georgia-based company that signed contracts with the cities of Sedona, Flagstaff, Scottsdale, and others in Arizona. Legislator Eugenia Charles Newton leads the council's Law and Order Committee. She supports the new system and says it's needed on the Navajo Nation.
We're hoping that with these license plate readers in these areas that are very, open and where there's not very many people living, like in the rural areas, it'll help to assist it with cases that get reported.
The company recently paused a pilot program after the state of Illinois learned Flock had allowed Customs and Border Protection to access data on drivers there. Here is Secretary of State Alexi Janulius.
We immediately ordered Flock to turn off Border Patrol's access to Illinois data.
Flock Safety says its systems capture billions of photos of license plates each month. The information collected, however, is owned by the jurisdictions in which the systems are located. Law enforcement receives inquiries from other agencies, the AP has reported.
Because of our actions, they have since paused their pilot program with the Border Patrol agency and other federal agencies, not only in Illinois, but nationwide.
The company markets a boutique of security systems ranging from the license plate readers to rapid response drones, gunshot detectors, and a national license plate network. It says it captures 20 billion license plates every month in 5,000 cities across 49 states.
911, what's your emergency?
Yeah, my car just got stolen.
Is anyone hurt?
Call coming in.
What type of vehicle?
In this Flock Safety promotional video posted to the company's YouTube account, police dispatchers use Flock's drones, license plate readers, and AI software to build a profile of the carjacker and lead to an arrest.
The vehicle has black racing stripes.
Run that vehicle through Freeform.
I got the plate. I'm adding it to the hot list.
The company also markets its products to HOAs, banks, retail stores, hospitals, and places of worship. Flock Safety also says how its data is being used by cities. For example, according to the company, the Payson, Arizona Police Department uses 17 of its license plate readers, keeps the data for 30 days, doesn't show people or use facial recognition, and shares data with more than 250 law enforcement agencies from California to Kansas, Idaho, and Ohio. The city of Flagstaff has defended its use of the system and as recently as last week highlighted its use of a Flock reader to arrest a man accused of firing a gun. Some cities like Sedona have paused contracts with Flock Safety, citing residents' concerns over privacy. Charles Newton says the tribe's ongoing challenges with missing and murdered women and property theft are unlike what Sedona may face.
Our community is very, very rural and it's expansive. 27,000 square miles is what we have on the Navajo Nation. It's not a small little area like Sedona. So I think that the situations are much different. The issues are much different.
The matter appears before the tribe's legislative council next. A flock safety spokesperson declined an interview with KJZZ News, saying it doesn't discuss its contracts. Michelle Marisco, KJZZ News, Flagstaff.
In politics, Republican State Senator Jake Hoffman filed an ethics complaint against Democratic Senator Annalise Ortiz, who reposted information about ICE activity near a Phoenix school in August. From the Politics Desk, Cameron Sanchez reports.
Some Republicans accused Ortiz of doxing federal agents and undermining law enforcement, and Hoffman claims the post was reckless enough to warrant a vote to expel her from office. Ortiz says the complaint is in line with broader efforts by the Trump administration to terrify and silence the public from exercising their First Amendment rights.
These targeted attacks come from their desire to create a white supremacist nation. It is why they are completely disregarding the Constitution.
It takes a two-thirds majority vote to oust a lawmaker from the narrowly divided state Senate, making expulsion unlikely. Short of that, Hoffman recommends Republicans strip Ortiz of committee assignments and impede her access to the chamber. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
This is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. In education news, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays and Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn are in a dispute over the management of school voucher funds. From the Education Desk, Bridget Dowd has the details.
In a letter sent last week, Mays demanded Horn end a voucher policy that automatically reimburses families for any purchase under $2,000. Mays says it has allowed purchases of prohibited items like diamond rings and lingerie. Horn says he's simply following state law by implementing an auditing process that reviews those purchases after they're made. He said the Education Department has collected or is in the process of collecting more than $600,000 that was paid out for improper purchases. And Horn added the accounts that made purchases for diamond rings and lingerie have been frozen. Bridget Dowd, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In sustainability, federal tax credits for electric vehicles or home energy efficiency upgrades are set to expire soon, and state officials are urging Arizonans to take advantage while they still can. Katherine Davis-Young reports.
When Congress passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, several federal tax credits to incentivize clean energy investments were cut short years before they had been set to expire. Maren Mahoney directs the Governor's Office of Resiliency.
We want people to know that those tax credits, you can still take advantage of them now, but you need to act now.
To take advantage of a $7,500 credit for new electric cars, you'll have to purchase the vehicle by the end of September, and credits for rooftop solar panels, insulation, home weatherization, electric panel upgrades, or heat pump cooling systems will all expire at the end of December. Katherine Davis-Young, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
This is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. And now for something different. From KJZZ's original production, The Show, here's co-host Sam Dingman with a cultural treat.
Much like certain songs and movies come to define the zeitgeist every summer, so too do colors. And like the songs and movies that come to encapsulate the cultural moment, it's usually hard to predict which color will emerge as the dominant hue in social media posts, clothes, and accessories. 2024 was, of course, the summer of bright green, inspired by the Charlie XCX album Brat. And our next guest says this year is looking like it might be defined by another pop music phenomenon. Amanda Kerberg studies digital culture at ASU. She is our resident culture expert. Amanda, good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us about this color and this artist that you think are looming on the horizon.
Oh, I imagine listeners can guess. We're talking Taylor Swift. We're talking Swiftynomics, The Life of a Showgirl album dropping on October 3rd. And we have this moment now where we can safely say orange is the new brat.
Orange is the new brat. I love it. I love it. So what do you take away from this orange color? What are some associations there?
So orange is generally known in brand psychology as this energetic, lively, excited, really, really friendly color. Also known, you know, if anybody has ever had your aura photo taken in Sedona, like me, I can't relate to the orange one. I always have a shocking bold red color. But orange also for people is this lively, friendly color. And according to Taylor Swift, that's what her life has been like lately. Mm-hmm. Her new life with, you know, Kansas City Chiefs, Travis Kelce. My theory, of course, is that if you look at the blur of the last 2 years into the Kansas City Chiefs colors of red and gold and you mix those together, you get a kind of Portofino orange glitter that we're talking on this new album.
So what are some other places we have seen this orange hue crop up since her album reveal?
Yeah. So this is what happens every time, like, some new color just takes over the zeitgeist. Everybody scrambles to participate in some way. So, of course, we've got, you know, the local Kansas City Union Station went orange, but we also had the Empire State Building go orange. X, Google, Canva, brands across fashion and food posted orange content, M&Ms. But I have to say, the people who had it the best are pretty much every social media manager who woke up in Texas that day. Just orange you glad you don't have to change your brand colors at all. Just Whataburger, Texas Longhorns, pretty happy people.
Well, so what do you think is behind, because as you were just pointing out, we see this phenomenon all the time where brands, social media headers, people change their traditional color schemes to associate themselves with this new color that, say, a popular artist is expressing. What do you think is behind that urge to kind of align yourself or associate yourself with that color?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's the classic thing, right? If we can, like, steal a little bit of that feeling that you have about an artist, about an entertainment product, about a new song, whatever it is, we can associate that happy emotion that you have with them with our brand. Just feel a little bit of that today for M&Ms or for Balenciaga. It's just a way, I think, to get to make your brand feel a little bit new and fresh and involved in the conversation, even if, of course, you're not going to long-term change those colors. Because the fact that they're steady and reliable as the colors they are is also important.
Yeah.
But, yeah, social media, because it's a changing conversation every day, really lends itself to, oh, we need to find ways to connect with people today and, of course, tomorrow in the long term.
You know, I have to say, something I'm thinking about as we're talking about this is, you know, as a millennial public radio host, I'm contractually obligated to be into vinyl. and I sometimes find myself having this sort of crusty conversation like, you know, nobody cares about album art anymore. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, between Charlie XCX and Taylor Swift, there is a sense, it seems like, that an artist with a really strong vision can still drive not just the cultural conversation, but kind of cause us to see the world through their eyes a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that, I mean, as a millennial public radio listener, I agree. Also contractually obligated to be into vinyl. I've got Sabrina Carpenter's new album on the on the way right now. And I think, yeah, it really is shaping the conversation now in a way that I feel like it hasn't in a while. But so when these new album covers drop and then we wait for all of the different versions to, it becomes a way to shape the conversation both aesthetically and thematically as well. I think Sabrina Carpenter's definitely led the discourse very much thematically in recent months.
Yes.
While in the case of, you know, Brat Summer and then now Taylor Swift's Orange, it's been very much an aesthetic disruptor. And it has been a disruptor. I mean, if you look at, like, what Pantone thought the color of the year was going to be, we had Mocha Mousse, Pinterest, based on all, you know, their aggregation of everybody's clicks and cues, thought it would be Dark Cherry. Huh. Nothing matters. Nothing matters when Taylor Swift enters the conversation.
right. Crowds out everything else. Well, the other thing that I think is interesting about these colors like orange, green, these are very, like, bright, attention-grabbing colors, which seems like a bit of a departure from the so-called millennial gray phenomenon.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. No, I swear I can't open TikTok now without some bright-eyed Gen Z person completely demolishing a millennial gray kitchen. We had so much gray in our lives. I mean, I think we had, you know, not to get too dark, but I think we had a lot of gray in our lives thematically. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the movie desaturation that we saw in across cinema in the 2000s and the early 2010s. I mean, there was just a specific aesthetic that was really, really pushed against bright, saturated colors. And so we're seeing such a response to that now. We're talking about these really, really bright greens or that we saw even with Billie Eilish, the yellows that we've seen come from artists like Rihanna and Beyonce. I mean, these are just bright, bold, saturated colors. And that is a very different vibe then. Yeah.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye on the orange as we head into fall. That is the show's pop culture expert, Amanda Kerberg. Amanda, thank you as always.
Thank you so much, Sam.
This has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by Helios Education Foundation, Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation, Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Jill Ryan. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more online, and on the KJZZ mobile app.